Hey folks, this week we have something special cooked up. I got to chat with Dan Gill, the chief product officer at Carvana. You know, that company with those car vending machines. We had a good chat about why Carvana is much more than that. Personally, I've used them several times to buy cars. I've talked about it here on the show, and I think it's a big deal because, man, the car buying experience in America is just awful. I recently went to a Toyota dealer just looking for a minivan, and the minute I stepped in, the price was $10,000 higher. They didn't have the car for 3 months, and there was just lie upon lie, and it was just a really weird interaction and brought me right back to Carvana. So I want to chat with Dan about how this company works, kind of what makes them different, what is their secret sauce. And also, we talked about some of the issues Carvana has been having too over the last few years. They've had registration delays. They've had issues with cars coming in with certain issues. I really want to know how Dan and the company overall was just thinking of these issues and how they were going to carve a better path forward. And I'm generally interested in this product. I do think in many ways, buying a car online is something more people are going to be doing. You don't want to be dealing with a dealer, and their overall experience is just so much nicer. So I'm a little biased here. This is just me talking to somebody working at a company that I genuinely admire and I think can do a lot of good for consumers. And if you want to follow my whole history with this company, I've written about it several times at Engadget. In 2020, I wrote a piece called Carvana Made Buying a Car Painless During Pandemic Hell. That's the story of how, you know, as soon as my family moved to Atlanta, I was able to buy a Toyota RAV4 pretty painlessly over my phone. That was a wild experience. I've also written about the Pacifica Hybrid that I bought. That was a fun minivan. And most recently, my quest to find a cheap used EV, all of which happened thanks to Carvana. Anyway, here is my chat with Dan Gill, Chief Product Officer at Carvana. Dan Gill, thank you so much for joining us on the Engadget podcast.
Hey, I appreciate it. I've been an Engadget fan for a very, very long time, so this is cool.
Awesome, awesome. And, you know, this is not a paid interview. I've just been a Carvana fan for a long time, too. I've written about it several times at the site. And I'm interested in talking with you about, like, how this company works and what you guys are doing to kind of look ahead. My first question for you. I think Carvana is something, it's a company most people recognize from the the initial media blitz of the car vending machine.
Yeah.
And I think what Carvana is something more beyond that. For anybody who has bought cars or ever had to go to a dealer or anything, I feel like that experience in America is one of the worst things out there. We have very few consumer protections. It's a weird experience when you go to buy a car. Just how insane that whole situation could be. From my perspective, it seems like Carvana and your competitors do, like CarMax, anything doing online purchasing and choosing and actually just dealing with the whole purchasing process seems like a better solution. Can you tell me, how has Carvana evolved from the early days? What was the initial idea for the company? And how have you evolved from just being, the car vending company?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think we are learning all day, every day, and always running, dozens of experiments across the business and iterating. But I think one thing that might be a little bit interesting about Carvana is how much has not changed over the course of like the 12 years of building. I think that, like you said, car buying is pretty brutal. And I think we just had to accept that it was the way that it was, because it's pretty well unchanged from, like the 40s. And you go to the dealership, and we all just had to accept that you had to go to the physical dealership because that was the only place that the cars were, and you wanted to sit in the cars. And now you're a captive audience. And so you got to go through the grinder of the sales guy and the sales manager and the finance guy and the finance manager and negotiate your trade in. And it's just this serialized process of many, many transactions. And I think that's what protected it from going all the way online and even being sort of like an e-commerce versus bricks and mortar disruption story, was this notion that you had to go to a physical dealership. And I think there's a couple reasons that that was true. One, and most of the transactions require financing. And the idea that you could do self-service financing and get terms instantaneously on, a broad array of cars was impossible and not supported. Two, a lot of transactions require a trade-in, and that really seemed scary. The idea that you would, through the internet, value someone's car that you have not touched or seen and get it right and do it profitably seemed basically impossible. And then three, in e-commerce, often you're shipping through FedEx or UPS or USPS, and that's how you're getting the product to the end customer. And in automotive, that did not exist, the fulfillment aspect of how do you then get the car to the customer. So those three things sort of made it impossible to turn this mediocre transaction into what we all would hope for, which is a really broad selection to choose from, open 24/7, delivery to your door, all the things that we sort of expect as consumers. And that was the vision from day one. And I think, you know, we had that vision. We saw sort of where the economies of scale would come from and how we'd be able to offer incredible prices and a really great experience. It just turns out it's very, very difficult to do. And so, you know, we're more than 10 years in. We've invested $10 billion in capital in building a nationwide logistics network and a financing platform and a wholesale auction business for cars that we don't retail to customers. And all of that has just taken a really long time. I think it's sort of one of those classic, like, we overestimate what we can do in a year, but underestimate what we can do in 10 sort of things, where, you know, it's been a bit of a slog, but where we are now is pretty special and we're excited about it.
What were some of those growing pains? Because it does sound like you had to build a lot of stuff from scratch. A lot of this was not done before. And also, I feel like you're actively going against a very powerful and moneyed group, you know, like the car buying market, but also used car salespeople too. Like, they're politically influential. They have a lot of money. You know, I feel like there's a reason there aren't many consumer protections around those folks, because they typically, help support politicians that just kind of turn a blind eye to them. What were the difficulties for you guys building this platform to where it is today?
Well, first things inside of the industry, the blessing was that we were laughed at for a long time. It was like, right. This is so dumb, and everyone has tried this before, and you know, history is littered with the corpses of people like you. And so that was sort of nice. We just weren't taken very seriously, and we were sort of left to our own ambitions, which was great. So the industry didn't put up a lot of friction for a while, until we became, I guess, a little bit more intimidating, and yet, we, you know, even at this stage are sort of 1.5% of the used car market. And it's an incredibly large market. And so we have ambitions to be a lot bigger than that. But, you know, there's still a lot of people doing things the way that they do them. And you know, the industry continues on, and we're just going to go as hard and as fast as we can. I think the things that were growing pains were really just scaling the offering, where, you know, early on, you can put a lot of human beings in the loop when you're trying to do loan underwriting and title and registration work, and you're only delivering, you know, we initially only had cars sort of outside of Atlanta, and we were only delivering to Atlanta. And then we did sort of, you know, Charlotte, Nashville, Raleigh, and had cars in Atlanta and built like sort of a circle around that. And then, you know, we had two big inventory centers, and we connected them with logistics, and then connected, you know, all of Texas up. But we built this sort of web that now hits about 91% of the United States driveways. But we got to do it sort of one part at a time. That mm-hmm. said, as you do that, the number of edge cases and exceptions that come up go up. And even if they're a small percentage of transactions, they get to be a real number in volume, and you just can't throw people at it. You have to build systems to handle, you know, more things and make those exceptions less painful. And so we've had a lot of growing pains through scaling. And I think are really proud of the fact that, you know, we hit record sales. We had a huge spike into 2022, and we sort of came back down as pricing went crazy and interest rates went crazy, and we're back at all-time record sales, but we're doing so with far fewer people in terms of, you know, the customer care and loan underwriting and title and registration work, and even our fulfillment network has just gotten massively more efficient as we've been able to build out the systems for that.
Gotcha. Like those edge cases, those are, I think, the things I keep seeing online when people complain about car buying service sometimes, like a title taking too long to arrive. I've seen that reported a lot on Reddit. Sometimes vehicles arrive that aren't, you guys say you have like what, the 150 point check, but kind of seems like things are getting through that aren't hitting that. How are you guys trying to deal with those edge cases and also, you know, just create a more consistent experience? Because I've had generally a good experience, but I've definitely seen people say like they've had issues and that's been a problem for them. How are you guys kind of approaching that?
Well, it's like two things. our actual standard is perfection. That's what we're shooting for. And I think culturally, we are an organization that is very, very high accountability. And one of the things that's allowed me to stay at Carvana for now, I'm about 11 years in, is the fact that like our truth is very good. There's nothing hidden anywhere. And yet the reality is sometimes we get things wrong. And I think what we really try to do is take it on the chin, be accountable, try and make it right as fast as humanly possible, and then learn from those mistakes and try and build in systems and processes to drive them down. And so I think you're exactly right. One thing that's really challenging about the retail transaction of selling someone a car, it's a big transaction. They've spent a lot of money. They want to be really excited about the car. And there's a lot of ways that we can get it wrong. We can be late with a delivery. We can have a quality issue that slipped through, or maybe even a quality issue that came up during transport. It could be a registration delay. There's just a lot of links in the chain, and you only have to get one thing wrong for the transaction to be sort of a disappointment to the customer. So we're obsessed. We measure our failure rates at every single aspect of you know, the whole chain, the handoff of the car at every stage, and try and build out the systems to make it right. The title and registration one is a super interesting one where, you know, I think it came up really prominently during COVID where, ultimately there's so much paperwork and it's a mixture of like triplicate carbon copy, wet signatures with e-signatures. And if you're trading in a car and there's two names on the title and one of them's deceased, but you've bought the car in Pennsylvania and you're delivering it to a different place in Massachusetts, like the number of permutations is basically infinite. And ultimately we have this feedback loop where we've got to get that paperwork to the DMV. The DMV reviews it. They've got to get it back to us. And during COVID, when they went work from home, that feedback loop got very slow. Even if it wasn't necessarily 100% our fault, we got to take it as it's 100% our fault because we have to get it right. And customers don't want to drive with expired, temporary plates. So there's no question about that. So what we have to make sure we do is we have to get it perfect at the outset. We have to have every, I dotted and T crossed. And we got to make sure that when it gets to the DMV or whomever's going to process that paperwork, that we don't need a feedback loop. It's right the first time. And I think at this stage, we are certainly better than we've ever been. And I would say very confidently better than anyone else in the world at this, at the just like millions of permutations so that, when a customer's uploading a document, we're using multimodal LLMs to review the document, extract the data, bounce that against a rules engine, make sure that it's ticked and tied, give the customer real-time feedback, right? We just want to get it right the first time. And make sure that what we're submitting is dialed. That's a good example of where we've just had to be incredibly disciplined. And then same on vehicle quality. We do not want to disappoint our customers. And we really try to have a high standard. Our Carvana certified standard is based off of the certified pre-owned standard that the OEMs use. Do put it through an incredibly rigorous set of processes. And then we just have to track meticulously whenever we get it wrong, trace that back to the source and keep at it.
Yep. I've noticed, I need to count the Carvana transactions I've done, but I did my first one as the pandemic was beginning, and I moved my family down to Atlanta, down to the Atlanta area, actually. So maybe that's why we were getting fast deliveries. But I was able to just sit in bed and order a RAV4, a used RAV4 in 10 minutes. And yeah. That kind of felt like, wow, how did that happen? And we generally had a good experience with that. Other cars, I've had cars come in where one wheel may have had some sort of issue. I've had rusted brakes. My dad actually just bought a car through Carvana and the tires were just like done. They were like 10% left. Yes. But every time we took it to service center and they called for the warranty help and you guys just fixed it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's something, that's not something I don't expect a dealer would typically do. So that is, I got to give you credit there. For that.
Well, sorry, it's like, smoothly. Yeah. We think that our standard has to be higher for mm-hmm. two reasons. One is you don't have that time to walk around the car on the lot and look at it. And even if you aren't going like, I see this, you're just sort of silently accepting that it is what it is. And you've seen that dent, or you've looked at the tires and you've compared with whatever is available to you. You certainly don't want to go back to the dealership another time or go to another dealership. There's just this like resignation of like, well, it is
what
it is.
The sunk cost of the dealer experience of like going there and you've wasted time, maybe you've wasted the day. It is really hard to back out of a deal when you spent 4 or 5 hours trying to
exactly
look at a thing.
And so we kind of have to have an even higher standard, and then we really try to be hyper transparent around, you know, we do the high res photography, we call out, hey, we didn't fix every single dent or scratch, because if we did, we'd have to raise the price. And so like our actual standard on that is we try and say, what if a customer was standing next to us and they looked at that dent and we said, hey, we can fix that for you right before we deliver it to you, but the price is going to go up by $400. We want it to be like, no, we're good, right? And we don't want it to be on the driver door if you're going to see it every day or whatever. And we really try to have like pragmatic standards that allow us to have the best pricing possible, and that customers would, if they were standing there with us, would go, yeah, I'd make the same trade. I don't want to pay to have that addressed, right? And then we take high resolution photos and often videos up close of those scratches or dents to say, like, we want to make sure that you see this so that you're not disappointed when it arrives, because that, like, you know, that disappointment is the distance between expectation and reality. So we want to set like super clear expectations on something like worn tires. That just like, that's a punch in the gut. Like, we can't get that wrong. We know that when we get it wrong, make it right as fast as humanly possible. That's built into the model, again, because people don't have that time to walk around it beforehand. And so it has to be baked into the model that you can return for free within 7 days, or that we have a 100-mile, you know, limited warranty, and that we're going to make it right if we get anything wrong, because the trust is just so important. I think we are in the like exception handling business at this stage. We've scaled pretty big. And we got to, you know, get it right the first time, like I said, but yeah, it's baked into the model that we've got to make things right when we make mistakes.
Can you talk about like what COVID was like for you guys? Cause I feel like you're the only car seller that has built up this platform to be ideal for that experience, right? To get all the info you need from home, but also achieve the financing and get delivery for it. What was that like? It was hard for all of us. It was a tough time. I feel like we've memory holed so much of how bad it was early on.
Yeah.
So much. But for you guys as a business, were you just immediately seeing like, oh, this could actually be really helpful, or we could help people get cars in ways they couldn't before? And also, were you seeing dealers kind of try to catch up to what you were doing at that point?
Yeah, totally. I think what's wild is like relative, you know, I come from a software background and shipping incremental software or servicing incremental users is like, you know, maybe you need to spin up extra compute, right? Or some additional cloud instances or whatever. For Carvana, if we want to sell more cars or fewer cars, there are humans, right? We got to buy enough cars and have enough people to fix them and enough people to transport them and enough people to pick up the phones. And right, I mean, just like, it's a very, very, very complex, vertically integrated operating system. And so COVID was first, slam the brakes hard. No one's ever going to buy anything ever again. The economy is frozen. Then it was, this is the best way to do this. And there were just these relative tailwinds towards e-commerce because we were already ready to do touchless everything, right? And we had to barely tweak a process to say like, hey, the delivery person is going to stay in the cab, they're going to be masked, right? But we were just ready. And so it became this relative tailwind that really accelerated our sales. And then there was the whole, you know, interest rate spike and new car shortage that caused used car prices to go up, and we had to slam the brakes again. And so it's a very difficult operating system to go through that much sort of start stop. And again, that's always been so important for us to focus on efficiency of the business and self-service and all those things over the last several years, is to be a little more resilient and a little bit more flexible to those ebbs and flows. But yeah, I would say COVID was a tailwind. It taught dealers to try and do things a little bit differently. I think, you know, whereas dealers have been a little bit happy to go back to the way things were, for us, you know, we think that push towards buying online and learning to buy cars online, even through dealers, is a relative tailwind for our model and for the industry, and has really sustained for us, where that market share continues to grow really, really fast. You know, we grew 40% year over year last year, from a large base. So I think it's persisted for us, and ultimately educating consumers that it's okay to buy a car online was a huge win for us.
Yeah. I have to say, like, I do like the initial pitch that you guys offer is like, you could take delivery, have the car for 7 days. That's your tryout period. Take it back. No questions asked. If you need to, the one thing there I've had to warn people about is the shipping fees, right? Because the shipping fees don't get refunded. And I'm wondering, are you guys thinking about any ways of making that process better or simpler, or just like maybe even eventually like, don't worry about refunding the shipping fees if you have to. Have you guys gotten feedback about that? And do you have any ways of tweaking that, you think?
Yeah, we have. I think there's two parts to that. It's sort of fun, you know, think about lessons learned. A lesson learned in e-commerce is people love free shipping. You got to have free shipping. And for us, that had a negative side effect, in that we are letting you tap into a nationwide network. And so you're in Atlanta, but we will deliver you a car that's in LA right now. Right? And you get 7 days to return it. And so if you think about how much cost that we absorb to move that car from LA to Atlanta, and then you decide you don't want it, right? That's just cost inside of the system, which means that cost has to get absorbed in price, right? So it just is lifting price for everybody. And what we found is it was like a free option on 30,000 cars to send from anywhere in the United States. And that clogged up our logistics network and put a lot of excess cost inside of the system. And so counterintuitively, we had to say, look, we need to put a little bit of friction into the system and have these shipping fees so that if people, what we really try to do is when you're in Atlanta, our entire system is going to sort all the cars to the ones that are closest to you and have $0 shipping fees. When you look at a car that has a shipping fee, we will always try to show you, here are the most similar ones that don't have a shipping fee, because we want you to find that, right? But if you really want the one that's, you know, four states over, we need to recoup some of that cost, because that allows us to keep sticker prices low for every car in our inventory. And so it's kind of counterintuitive that it's for overall network health. Now, our entire model, our entire long-term vision is best experience, best selection, broadest selection, and best value simultaneously. We want to offer you the lowest price, the highest trade-in bid that you can get anywhere, because that's the best customer experience possible. And so, you know, we've really proven that our unit economics are differentiated from the rest of the industry. We're scaling really well. And so how do we give that value back to customers? And there's going to be a lot of ways for us to do that. That could be repeat purchase incentives. That could be higher trade-in bids. That could be lower sticker prices. That could be lowering of shipping fees. Whatever it is, you know, once we hit our goals, we have said we put out a pretty ambitious target: 3 million cars a year, 13.5% EBITDA. That's what we put out to the market. The EBITDA target feels very attainable for us, and that means we think we can go in excess of that. That excess goes back to customers. We want to give that back to customers. And so that could take a lot of different shapes. That could come in the form of the shipping fees. That could come in other ways. But we've tried to be pretty thoughtful about why they exist, and then really try to help customers avoid them if we can.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair. You guys have also gained a reputation for being pretty pretty good with trade-in values. I have to ask, how is that sustainable?
Yeah.
How, like, because you are offering more than certainly than dealers do, maybe with a private sale, you could maybe like haggle something more with somebody, but how is that sustainable for Carvana to be throwing a lot of money at people, you know, at all these cars?
Yeah. Well, for sure. To me, it's like, that's the optimal outcome, is we are the most profitable dealer in the United States. We are generating more profit per vehicle because of this vertically integrated model, where we are the lender and we are the transport company, and we do have a wholesale auction. And so all of the, basically the profit pools that are associated with any vehicle transaction, we are the sum of those profit pools. So each transaction is worth more to us than it is to anybody else. And as a result, that's the best possible outcome, is for people to go, they overpaid. I mean, honestly, it was such an incredible experience. I got a bid that was higher than anywhere else. They came the same day. I was paid the same day, and they just left, right? Like, what more could we possibly ask for? And yet the reason that we can do that is because we've built this entire vertically integrated system that captures the profit pools of all the other parts of the automotive ecosystem, which means that every customer and every car is worth more to us than it is to the alternative place that it can go. Whether that car is going to meet our retail standards and be retailed and maybe attach our financing or attach a warranty product or whatever the case may be, or it doesn't meet our retail standards. We are ultimately the wholesale auction as well. We own ADESA, the second largest wholesale auction in the United States. So we're going to sell the car through that. And because we are that disposition channel for the car and there's not other, you know, handoffs to be made and hands in that cookie jar, those cars are just worth more to us. And so, you know, we really love the idea that we shock people with how good the values are, and think that, and we see in our data that when someone comes to sell us a car, even if they're not ready to buy, they come back and buy from us in the future because they had such a great experience. So our actual incentive and our actual goal is to pay the most we can for every car.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's certainly, that's what's kept me around as a customer. Like I have tried going to dealers after doing a couple of Carvana purchases, and it's like immediate disappointment, immediate, like you guys have a price online. I step in the door, the price is now $8,000 more. Oh, yeah. Also the car isn't here. The car is not going to be here for 3 months. And that was 10 minutes of me stepping into a dealer recently, which was a highly rated Toyota.
The one
dealer
that blows my mind is that sometimes they'll publish prices and then there literally will be fine print that says after $3,000 trade in. And it's like, how can you publish that? And so I don't know. I think another thing that's kind of fun about Carvana is our team is almost entirely, we've grown a lot, but we're as you know, sort of our senior leadership across the company is pretty well intact for the last 10 years. And these are all, it's the founders and it's team that's been building this thing. And so we really care deeply about this stuff. And we've bought into the vision and we bought into the mission. And so, you know, everybody's just trying to make it right and build the thing that we all wish existed. I think we're pretty resolute that as long as we just make the customer experience better and better and better and better, we're just going to keep winning.
It is. I definitely have noticed a very, like, at least pro consumer vibe to what you guys are doing compared to other car dealers. And I think that whole thing of keeping a customer and keeping them happy at least is a good concept, because I feel like a lot of dealers are just in there for that transaction. They purchase and then the customer can just like go to hell. I don't know. It just kind of seems that way. Is Carvana doing anything to kind of shift the way this country is dealing, like on a federal level or maybe on a regulatory level, like how we're dealing with car sales and how consumers are being treated? Because I'm very pro-consumer. You know, I'm somebody, I used to work in IT, and what I do at Engadget, like I'm always doing, writing about things I think can help our readers. And my God, the sheer insanity of this market and going into a car dealer and just like how it's just all allowed and that's just the way it is. I don't know if there is a stop to it. I don't know what else we could do other than people like Elizabeth Warren kind of speaking up more. Is Carvana doing anything, I don't know, to raise awareness
there? A couple things. You know? I would say this, the soapbox that I've been on for 10 years and not shouting loud enough yet, I suppose, is like dealer and dock fees, for example. Just like everybody hates resort fees when you get a hotel quote and then you find out that there's like a mandatory $59 charge a night, and just how frustrating that is. Automotive has the same concept in dealer and dock fees. And these can be upwards of $1,000. There's certain states where they're uncapped. There's other states where they are capped, but they are not disclosed in price, despite the fact that they are, if you charge one person, you got to charge everybody. And so the basic reality is that every dealer charges the max that their state allows on every transaction, and they do not have to publish those fees in price when they're advertising anywhere. Our dealer fees have been $0 for every transaction in our history, and they will always stay at $0. So it's really just been our choice to just not charge that fee because it's not transparent. And we think it's garbage. So I think that's something we've really trumpeted, is that even in the advertising space, just saying, you know, make it be disclosed. People can charge it and we can choose not to charge it, but instead we just get to play on this sort of uneven playing field where the price isn't really the price and ours is. So that's something we try to make a lot of noise about. I'd say the other, and unfortunately it's being rolled back right now, but I saw that you wrote about it, is the EV tax credit was another great program. We got out immediately and met with the IRS and met with the team behind it. And we built technology to integrate directly into the IRS so that instead of you having to wait for your next tax return to get the $4,000 credit, it just came off the sticker price same day. We took the risk and then the IRS had to pay us the money. And we built that out so that it was seamless, for the end user, and they got the $4,000 that day off. And that was a really cool project that we took on. We were the first to adopt it and really do that integration. So we're always looking for ways, to get one, credit, if we're going to try and save people money. And two, if there are things that we can adopt that help them save money, then we're going to build it, straight into the process.
Gotcha. Yeah, I did notice that as I was looking for my cheap EV in my recent article. I was like, oh, some actually have the EV credits here and looks like it could be applied immediately. That's cool. I wish they applied to me, unfortunately. Have to ask you for a final question. Like, what do you see ahead for Carvana? Is there something that you've always wanted to implement that you guys have not been able to?
Couple things. First and foremost, we put out the word that 3 million units a year, 13.5% EBITDA, that would make us, 3.5 times larger than the largest ever built. That's not a limit. That's an ambition, where we're trying to go in the near term. And so I think that is the first and foremost. We've got a lot of wood to chop inside of the used car business that we have, and a lot of scaling to do and keep building that out and keep serving customers and growing there. So that's first and foremost. I think secondarily, something that I've always felt we just weren't as good as I wish that we were is on the vehicle research side. Is just like how we can help you determine which car is right for you, and how do you differentiate between all the options in the market? And like everybody, I just bought a car from us, and I did my research elsewhere, and I used a lot of ChatGPT, and I thought that the content was incredible and really, really helpful. We need to make sure that's fully built into our platform and our capabilities, and so we are doing a lot of work there to get that fully integrated and I think that we can be just a better end-to-end resource where you do all of your research and get all the personalization that you need to make the selection that you want. So that's something that I think is coming in the near term, and that with this AI revolution, we're incredibly well set up because all of our systems talk to each other. Everything is self-service, and AI can connect with all of those systems to really unlock some incredible things. But I think we'll get a lot better there in the near term.
So you're saying like you guys are considering some sort of LLM to help people just like sort out what they want and the differences in models and things like that?
And we have it now, right? Like you can talk to Sebastian on our site. I think it's good. I think we're pretty unique in that you can say, do you have any Tesla Model 3s for under $500 a month? And we'll say, yeah, we have 310 of those. And so that the ability to answer penny accurate, what is my monthly payment or what will my down payment be? I can only pay up to this much. Is a really hard problem. But because we are the lender and we're doing all that math, we can apply your trade-in value to that math. We can hit that internal system integrated with an LLM and give you that information and produce search results for you. So we do that now. And I think we're iterating really, really fast in that space. But I think the part around like what matters to me most, I want an affordable EV, don't have a ton of range anxiety, whatever. That's an area that I think we're getting better at fast. And I think it doesn't just show up in chat. It just needs to show up in the content in the page being dynamic to you. There's no reason that we don't just pre-generate that content, knowing once you tell us what matters to you, how do we make the page, accommodate that? And so I think there's a lot that we can do there that's going to make the site just like so intuitive and really more valuable, so that you don't feel like you got to bounce between too many places to make a choice and then just come to transact with us. We want to help you end to end.
That seems fair. Yeah, it seems fair. And yeah, as a user, as a customer, I think that'd be pretty helpful too. Yeah. So Dan, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Is there anything else you want to leave us with about Carvana or about what you're doing these days?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think you've asked some awesome questions, and I will just say personally, I've been an Engadget fan. I got to operate a network of discussion forums for 7 years back in the day, and a bunch of consumer internet stuff. Consumer products sites, and we were huge fans. So this has been really, really fun, and I appreciate you having us on.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, I hope to chat with you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks.